Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And again, a big thank you to the Bluestack Choir for calling up for a chat with us. It was great to have them in. I have all the names here. I've put them to one side now. I just wanted to give everyone a mention again. Yes, indeed. So they rehearse Monday between 6.30 and 7.30 down in Donegal Town. And they've performed all over the place. Highland Radio, Croke Park, The Doll, and so on and so forth. A big thanks once again to John McCarry, who we spoke to first. Fintan Gallagher, who was amazing accompanying the choir. Clett Glacken was up with us as well. Roisin McDade and also Michelle Ford. Nicole Gallagher, who is a choir member and also does the signing as well. Fantastic. You can watch that back, by the way, if you didn't watch it live. So thanks to Nicole for calling up. And Dylan Purcell, Owen Rooney, Anya McBrarty, who had just finished the Bluestack Challenge 10K with her family. Amazing. And all very proud of her family, and we're very proud of her as well. Ethan Daly, who was excellent singing as well. And that was just a group of a big, big choir. Now, also, Ethan has a request for his other half, his girlfriend, Stephanie Moore. Stephanie Moore's from Killybegs and is celebrating her birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Stephanie. Lots of love from Ethan, of course, very important Ethan, but from all of us here as well at Highland Radio, and I'm sure I can say that on behalf of all of our listeners as well. A caller says, the choir sounds like so much crack. Well done to everyone involved. Indeed, a lovely group of individuals, and certainly not the last time that we will, not the last time that we'll have them up here on the show. There seems to be some power issues at the moment, so we are not broadcasting currently on 102.1 in Castlefin or 104.7. As I say, there's been some sort of a power interruption that is being worked on as we speak. It's one of those things whereby the people that I want to hear that possibly can't because we're not on air, but we're still going strong on 103.3, and all of that's going to be resolved just as soon as we can get around to it. There is a very exciting night taking place. I was told about this months ago. It was flagged to me months ago, and here we are just almost on the eve. In fact, we are on the eve of it. It's Donegal Mental Health Staff Past and Present Social Evening. It's this Friday, the 6th of September. It's in the Mount Errigal Hotel, Letterkenny. At 7pm, there's a drinks reception. There's music by the excellent Sailor Bill. Tickets are €30 or €20 for sports or social club members. People who qualify for a pension, I'm not going to call them OAPs, I'm sorry. People who qualify for a pension, you know yourself, €20. The spot prizes, a buffet, smart, casual, dress code. Okay, let's talk about this with Pascal Blake, retired mental health care staff member of St. Connell's Letterkenny, and also Sarah Toy, psychiatric nurse with Donegal Mental Health Services. Good morning to the pair of you. Thank you so much.
Morning, Greg. Morning, Greg.
All right, Sarah, exciting? You excited?
Yeah.
Have you picked out your outfit?
Well, there's a few yet. We have to.
There's a shortlist.
There is. Yeah. No, really looking forward to it, Greg. Yeah. And thanks very much for having us on the show to talk about it. So this Friday night, as you mentioned, it's for former past staff and present staff, and would really encourage anybody who's any affiliation with St. Connell's Hospital down through the years, whether they're medical staff, nursing staff, administration, maintenance staff, domestics, anybody at all that are thinking about going or thinking, is this for me? Well, then it is for you, and we'd really welcome them on the night.
And what do you see the function of this night as? I mean, obviously it's an opportunity for people to get together and maybe even old colleagues to meet up or current colleagues to have a night out together. Yeah. Is that as simple as it is?
It really is, Greg. It's just really about reconnection for people who worked there down through the years and for are working there currently. I suppose my own experience is, starting off in St. Connell's Hospital and then moving out into the community, there's been a bit of a disconnect, you know, as services developed. Years ago, everybody knew everybody. You know, we were all one big family, and I know Pascal will probably talk about that, but that has been lost, and especially with COVID then, stop going out, stop reconnecting, stop these social events.
Well, maybe people travelled after working there and connections have been lost. What a fantastic way to reconnect.
That's right, exactly. So it's about that. It's about coming back together, having a chat, reminiscing, forming new relationships and reconnecting with old ones.
And dancing to Sailor Bill.
Exactly.
Pascal Blake, maybe not everyone knows that you're a former mental health care staff member at St. Connell's in Letterkenny. Back to 1978, is that when you started there?
That's when I started my training, Greg, at St. Connell's in the School of Nursing, which was a magnificent school of nursing at that particular time.
But before that, you were a porter in LUH.
Yes.
So are those two things connected? Did you see something that you wanted to, a path you wanted to follow as a porter there? Or talk to me a little bit about that.
I actually did. I worked at the LUH for about a year, and then the opportunity came up to get a student place at St. Carnell's Hospital, of which I was successful of getting at that particular time. Mm. It was on your doorstep. It was a wonderful group and organisation to get into. It was organised by the Northwestern Health Board on those days. It meant that students didn't have to travel. You were living in your own town, and it was very convenient, and you did your study there at St. Connell's. You would be in block for 6 weeks at a time, and then on to the various different wards, and there was a great team of tutors there at that particular time, which afforded us all a great education.
Mm. And what was your role in St. Connell's?
My role was you do your 3 years training at the School of Nursing, and you did the theory and you did the practice, and you became part of that team to look off after the people who were had mental issues. And it was most interesting because I would have worked through four admission units at that particular time. I know a lot of things have changed since that, but it was a wonderful place, you know, to care for those who weren't well.
Without getting into the politics of it, have we gone backwards or have we advanced since those times in your individual point of view?
My individual point of view with that, we have advanced.
Okay.
I do. The service is just not what they should be, what we would like it to be.
But the framework's better, even though that we need, there's probably other areas that we need recruitment and investment, but you believe it's a better sort of a framework to work within now.
It's best for the individual because we're removed from the institutional side of things, and it's a much better way of normal living, and it affords the individual better opportunities.
Yeah,
I have to say, for their own healthcare.
And I think we'd all agree with that, Sarah, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
That was a way of doing things of a time, but we have moved on. What do you see the advances we've made?
I suppose as Pascal alluded to, you know, more things now are in the community, and there is more focus on normal living and integration into community. There is major developments in services and community services and new clinical care programmes that have come on stream.
Because a lot good is done, you know, on programmes like this, and I hope listeners understand, and I'm sure they do, but, you know, if we talk about services or gaps in services, it is always acknowledged, or if it's not, it always should be acknowledged, the great work that is done. It's like in the acute hospital there. We know that the majority of people have a good experience, but that doesn't mean we can then all of a sudden brush over where there are gaps. And it's the same in mental health services as well. You know, there's some amazing stuff going on, but there are certain areas we need more resources and what have you to build on that. But that my point is that I think a lot of people accept that we have a good, strong Donegal mental health services, but there's always going to be space for improvements.
That's correct. Yeah. We can always learn. And, you know, that's important to listen to that and to learn from that and trying to develop. And again, Greg, a lot of times it does come down to resources and money and that. So hopefully we are going in the right direction. But
And you were working 6 years in St. Connell's yourself. You started your training there, did you, in 2001?
I started my training in 2001, in the School of Nursing.
And was it a transition period when you joined, or did you join in the same sort of a setup as Pascal did, and then you were there?
Same setup as Pascal. Yeah, it was all diploma back at that stage. There was no degrees in nursing. It wasn't university based. It was the School of Nursing, and like that too, you had no summers off. You worked 3 years straight through, and half of your 3 years was on placement and working in St. Connell's Hospital at the time, and then the other half was doing theory in a class room-based situation. I have great fond memories of coming on the wards with staff like Pascal and former staff, that some that are still with us and some that have sadly passed away. great experience, and we learned from the best, you know. It was amazing team, and it was a family, you know.
But you've had that experience of working sort of on a ward and then transitioning into the working in the community, which is a big change of system.
It is, because a lot of time in the community then you are working more solo, you're working, you know, in a smaller team compared to a big hospital setting that you would have been used to, with lots of colleagues and lots of people around you. So yeah, you're more working autonomously.
And Pascal, did you work till 2007 and 8 there, or did you retire before the sort of the transition?
Oh no, I was there through that.
Okay.
Greg, and one of the important things that Sarah has talked about there, that the opportunities that were given to former colleagues that got the opportunity to go to the UK and various different countries to do their post-reg general nursing, and a lot of them come back, return back and practice then, and some of them got wonderful qualifications, such as in behavioural therapy and occupational therapy. And without that foundation of the training at St. Connell's at that time, it was a great opportunity in life for them.
Yeah, for sure, indeed. We're talking ahead of a special night tomorrow night. It's in the Mount Errigal Hotel, and in fairness to pretty much all of the hotels, but Mount Errigal are so well accustomed to putting on big events like this, and it's always excellent. The staff's always, you're never waiting too long for a drink. Not that that's what it's all about, but anyway, at 7 p.m. there is a drinks reception, then there's music by Sailor Bill, there's going to be spot prizes on the night, a buffet served, and the dress code is smart casual dress code, so really that effectively is whatever you're comfortable in. What are you wearing? I'm thinking Pascal, two-piece suit, open neck shirt.
This time, I've done many of these functions down the years, comparing and MC. So,
are you working tomorrow night?
I'm MCing.
Oh,
with
right.
My
well, that's
colleague,
different then. Okay.
Eugene Duffy. But I'm going to be casual good dressed. And I would like to see that everybody encourage people that at this point that they're thinking about coming or not coming. I would encourage everybody to, yes, definitely come, because the McInniff family, Terry and Loretta, has always looked after us down the years. This wonderful committee of Sarah, Eugene, Nancy, Terry and Marie have put an awful lot of work into this, and I would like to see it a good success for them. Because for me, it's easy, because I was just asked to come in and help with the comparing and to be representative of the people that have retired.
Yeah. Sarah, no excuse for people not to go.
Not
as
all.
I say, if you're on the fence, go. It's going to be great crack and very casual too. And as well as that, you're going to have instantly something in common with people there a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. My own mum is actually coming. She worked in St. Connell's in the 70s and 80s. And funny, a former colleague used to joke and say, I worked with your mum when she was pregnant with you. So, and now I'm working with you. So, there's great connections. And it will be a great night. And any excess money that's raised on the night from the tickets and that is actually going to two really good charities as well, the Women's Centre and the Patient Comfort Fund in St. Connell's.
Okay, so if you needed any further incentive to go, that's it. €20 a ticket for sports and social club members, for people receiving a pension, 20 an old age pension, €20, and the spot prize is a lovely buffet to be served as well, and music by Sailor Bill, and the drinks reception at 7 p.m. just to it's a great actually way to sort of bump into people, if it's the way I imagine it to be in the foyer.
That's what I would just like to say, Greg, is that St. Connell's was always a great place for relationships and with family. Like, the residents were always treated well, like family, as were the staff. There was always a great bond among them, and that was something.
Was there a social club there, Pascal?
Not in the day. Okay. We had such things as tops of the town, the sports side of things, the guys that were involved in soccer and Gaelic and that. Some great people, you know, there was all of that there, but there was never sort of such thing as a unit.
Yeah, but there was lots of opportunities though to mingle, and I think maybe too with the new model, Sarah, you know, you say off the time you're sort of working individually, and it's a good opportunity for you or people currently in the current model to get together, where maybe it might be not possible at other times.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So it's just roll up in the day, is it?
You can come on the night, yeah. Nobody will be turned away. Even if you don't have your ticket, just show up on the night. It starts at 7.
Or you might not have your ticket, but it's not every €30 with you.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if you are coming and you're coming on the night, even give us a call in Parkview House and just let us know that you're coming, just for the numbers and that. And tickets are available in Parkview House, or contact Pascal or Nancy McNamee or Eugene Duffy for tickets.
And the word on the ground is, Greg, that there's a lot of people looking forward to it. They're making their mind up now, for those that haven't availed of the tickets to, that's not a problem, come on the night. And it's really a sad occasion in one way and a very glad occasion in the other way, because you're meeting old friends and acquaintances.
It's and in fairness, most social gatherings are almost like that as well too, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity to remember former colleagues or those who have gone before us, but also to celebrate current relationships and to build new ones.
Yeah.
All right, listen, I mean, and if all of that doesn't really resonate with you, it's a good night out, just plain and simple, a good night out with good fun and good music and a bit of crack as well. And Pascal Blake comparing as well.
Yes, giving it a go with that, with the help of my colleague Eugene Duffy, we'll be approaching a number of people to tell a number of stories that to reminisce, Greg, as such, and just make it a good, fun, relaxing night.
Brilliant. Okay. Anything either of the two you wish to add? Did you mentioned those organising it. We might do that again, because it's all right for someone like me who just sits here and talks about something the day it's about to happen, with the hope that, you know, we maximise that. But there's people beavering away in the background organising these things all of the while for weeks, and they're probably chewing their fingernails off their hands, hoping everything goes smooth. So who's behind all of this, Sarah? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I suppose Eugene Duffy has been a huge driving force in this. Nancy McNamee and the staff in Parkview House, Terry and Marie and all of them really are fantastic. Pascal came on board, myself. We didn't organise a committee or anything to organise the night. We just went with it, Greg, you know, and as it, people came on stream as time went on, and it's been fantastic. And I just want to mention too, local businesses have been fantastic and given various vouchers and items for spot prizes on the night, which is really appreciated as well.
So it was ages ago that me and Eugene were chatting in the Goose and Gander in Downings. He says to me, he says, "You'll give it a good plug for us, will you?" Yeah. And I says, "Yes, I will." He says, "You won't remember it." I says, "Yes, I will, Eugene." Here we are, we've done it.
Thank
all right.
You.
Eugene always very assertive.
Direct and persuasive.
Yes.
Also words I would put to him. But anyway, here we are. Yeah. And I do hope it's a fantastically successful night. Yeah.
I must say I was very honoured to be asked by the organising committee to be the representative for the retirees. And any functions that we would have done down the years, they were always fabulous, Greg. And Patsy Kroll used to say to us when we were in Tops of the Town and the day in the competitive days gone by.
What is Tops of the Town, Pascal? You've mentioned it twice. And the first time I thought, I'm not going to ask him because I'm going to look silly.
No. Well, it was a great event that was organised.
Yeah.
Fergus, or friend Fergus Leary, was the main man.
Was it like a festival or something? Was it like a festival?
It was a talent competition with local groups and organisations. Back in the day, you would put in a team, say, like, I'm going to say, like, Doherty's Butchers,
right.
Gaeltic's Factory back in the day, all locals. It expanded then to, I remember St. Connell's being in a final one time.
Right.
We were up against Orney in the
day. Then, you could go on then and represent,
nationally.
You? Right,
nationally,
yes, I do know about it. Yeah, I do know about it, that's right. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And it was great. You were talking about the social club there. That was the way it
that
worked
was the closest,
in the
that
day.
That was one of it, yeah.
And it also, the purpose of that was funding for the residents' annual holidays down in Carrigart with the late Dermot Walsh. And his family used to host.
That's correct. Yes,
down
indeed,
there,
yeah.
There was Bundoran days as well, and it gave
that,
a lot.
That event that was held in Carrigart was something else, because they gave over that hotel. I think it was FOC.
Yes, yes.
For 3 or 4 days, and they accommodated
a week
people
at a time,
and there was functions and everything downstairs.
Yeah,
and that obviously was something that was very important to them for their own reasons. Yeah. But first time I heard about that, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That really was, I've not heard the like of it before.
And that gave the residents, Greg, a great outlook and something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And there was a social therapy team then built up within that. Mm. And it gave the quality of life.
But you know what was as impressive about that as well, Pascal? Not only, say, for instance, what was the name of the family again? Sorry, just remind me, the former owners of the car.
Dermot Walsh.
Dermot Walsh and his family. Obviously, firstly, they can say, right, look, we've got this facility, you can avail of it. But I think an awful lot of work would have to have been done with management and staff to actually facilitate that and to move certain sort of facilities or requirements off-site to somewhere else. Yeah. That would have been a big... It would have been a big piece of work.
Yeah, you had 50 maybe residents and staff going down for a period of time for that holiday, which was hosted by them. And I myself, we as staff nurses would have been appointed to do our duty down there for that period
Could
of
that
time.
Could that be done now, do you think, if a facility were made available?
It could be, but you see... The difference is now, Greg, the institution has now been removed.
That was my concern. Yeah, exactly.
That's gone now.
And people are all in different places and what have you.
Yeah, okay. And modern day facilities are in place, as Sarah would have greater experience than I.
All right.
It does still happen in outlying areas, like they're called supervised residential units. Uh-huh. And they do go on annual holidays to different places now. There's no one set that the residents pick where they want to go, whether it's Bundoran or Clamanagh or somewhere near hand.
It just happens in a different way.
Different way.
All right, listen, sorry, we went off completely in a tangent there. Okay, thank you so much, Sarah Toy, psychiatric nurse with Donegal Mental Health Services. It's been lovely having you
thank
in. Pascal Blake, former mental health care staff member of St. Connell's Letterkenny. Pascal, as always, great to have you. And just as a final plug and a reminder for you, that Donegal Mental Health staff, past and present, are invited to a social evening tomorrow night in the Mount Errigal Hotel, Letterkenny. Drinks reception at 7 p.m. Music is by the excellent Sailor Bill. Tickets are €30, €20 for old aged pensioners, sports and social club members. And there's a buffet. Spot prizes, which are probably going to be smart, but you're asked to dress smart, casual, dress code, or whatever you're comfortable in, within reason. Just have something on. And if you're on the brink, or, you know, post-COVID, some of us are not as good at socialising as we were, you know, and we can be our worst enemies sometimes in getting back into the back into the swing of things.
I think this is the time, Greg, now to make this break for former colleagues and friends to get back in, because people were a bit hesitant everything.
If you do stop mixing and you do stop going out as much, and it's not resource-based, the longer you do it, actually, the harder it can be to get back out into it again. So, hey.
It's a wonderful excuse to get out.
Brilliant. All right. Yeah. Okay, we can't do any more for you, Eugene. Thanks, Pascal. Thanks,
Thank you very much, Greg, for having us.
Have a great night. We'll be back with more shortly.
Thank you.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Okay, we're joined in studio now by Claire Irwin, a quantity surveyor. Also with we're talking about heating systems for new builds, and this is an interesting one, because there are different options now, aren't there, and pros and cons and what have you. Claire, good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning.
Right, okay, so say for instance you are someone who's rebuilding a house, building a new house. What options are there in terms of heating now? It's like oil and gas, is that still in favour? Is it no-go?
No, they're kind of in the past. There are some people that it's very difficult to get oil and gas out of their mindset. But the building regulations changed a few years back. There was something called NZEB introduced, which stands for Nearly Zero Building Energy Rating. So basically a home has to be built with much greater insulation, better windows, and it has to perform better to be able to retain the heat. So as a result of that new set of regulations, homeowners are obliged now to use a renewable source of heating. So it's mainly air to water or geothermal.
So if I were to build a house and I said, I want oil, because you know what, if there's a nuclear apocalypse, I'll still have oil heating. I can't get that now. There's a point system, isn't there? I mean, if you have a chimney or...
Technically, you could put in oil if you wanted, but you would have to compensate that with an alternative renewable source, such as solar panels on your roof. But generally speaking, I would always encourage every homeowner to install either air to water or geothermal. Mm-hmm. It's a renewable source of heating. It's much more energy efficient. It's three times more energy efficient than oil or gas. So it's really a no-brainer. You're also it's a renewable source of heating. So you're helping you're playing your bit towards reducing climate change and reducing your carbon footprint. But before you get to the heating system.
Yeah.
The first thing that a homeowner should really, really hone in and focus on is how the building's built. So ensure that you have adequate insulation in the floor, in the walls and in the attic and roof space, and that your windows are really well, rated.
And it is a big difference maker, isn't it, in terms of 100%. How easy it is to heat a house, but 100%. More importantly, heat retention as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you have the foundations in with wall insulation, floor insulation, and attic insulation, you won't be as reliant on your heating source any longer. So the SEI call it a fabric first approach. So if you get the fabric correct, it's like putting on your coat.
Yeah.
If you've on your coat, you're not going to feel the cold.
I have a draft in my house.
Yes.
I don't know where it's coming from. I know you can get people and bring them in to figure out where the drafts are coming from. But one, when I got the broadband fitted, they drilled through, right? And I am going to resolve it. But there's just a little space around the wire.
Yeah.
And the blast of cold air comes through there. It's a struggle to heat the room because it's always... That's a very, very simple example, but that's a tiny little hole. And genuinely, you can see the impact it has on that room.
Exactly. And that's a drill hole. So can you imagine what effect an open chimney would have in a room?
Yeah.
It's just a constant draft sucking the heat out of the house that you're paying
so
much
sucking, to generate. If it's sucking what you can see, i.e. the smoke, it's going to be sucking the hot air out as
completely.
Well.
Completely. So like for existing homeowners, there's very simple things that you can do to reduce your energy consumption in the home, such as sealing up drafts, making sure, around your attic access hatch to make sure that that's sealed. Insulation in your attic. There's a really good grant from the SEEI for attic insulation and it covers, in the most houses, it covers the cost. That's a very simple one that everyone.
And some people might have their attic insulated in the past and, you see that little 3 or 4 inch stuff. Then I've seen other attics that were subsequently insulated. It's like seven duvets.
Like this amount, yeah.
Seven duvets on top. So
exactly.
Obviously... It's not just the whether it's insulated or not. I presume it's about the quality and depth of the insulation.
It's an adequate amount of insulation. So most homes that were built, say, 20 odd years ago, they have about 100 mil of insulation in between the joists and the ceiling, whereas now it's up to about 300 or 400 insulation. And a lot of people have attic insulation and then they load up their suitcases and their Christmas trees and their decorations up into the attic and compress it down. And that's diminishing the U-value properties of the insulation. So insulating your attic, it's like putting on your hat. It's an inexpensive thing to do, but it's a really
And you say there are grants there that would, for your average property, might actually cover the entirety of it.
The attic insulation, that's focused on covering at least 80%.
Okay.
In the average home, but many homes would cover the full cost.
And also too, you see houses with loads of holes in the walls where presumably they've been pumped.
Yes.
Is that effective?
Pumped insulation
or what's the best way of, I wonder, of insulating the cavity, filling the cavity?
So there's many different ways to insulate your walls. If you have a cavity wall with no insulation in it, pumping where you would see those holes, that's a really effective and it's easy and it's very, it's not intrusive to your house. You don't have to re-skim walls and all the rest. So it's very easy. A contractor can come in and punch the holes from
and
the
what
exterior.
If you, I think in my house, I have like, I don't know why it was put in there, but like a tiny bit of polystyrene between the bricks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably about 50 mil. Whereas nowadays it would be about 110. If you want to go a little bit further and if you have the budget to allow it, you could dry line the inside of the wall. So you're installing about 60 or 90 mil of insulation in the inside. But that involves removing your skirting, re-skimming your walls, painting. It's intrusive.
It's a major undertaking,
There's an alternative option where you can insulate the outside of your wall so you could install the insulation externally. You don't have to move out. You don't have to change anything. It's a bit more expensive, obviously. But the grant funding reflects the cost also, so there's a higher level of grant funding available for that.
Right, so we've either built our house the way we should to maximise whatever heating system we need, or maybe hopefully people have been able to retrofit or pump or whatever it might be to improve insulation in an older house. So, but let's focus on new builds. So you mentioned there's two main options, isn't there? Heat to water.
Air to water, or geothermal heating. That's the main two options that most homeowners around this area are using, yeah.
And air to water, is that the one that relies on a pump?
An air to water heating system has the fan unit usually at the back door. So the fan works at in taking in the air from just the natural environment and it transforms it into heat inside the house. The geothermal heating is a bit different. You don't have the fan unit at the bottom, at the back door. Geothermal, you either drill holes deep into the ground outside, or you have the coils in your garden. So I have geothermal in my house. So we have two holes that were drilled into the ground. They're about 120 metres deep. So the water goes down. There's steel pipes drilled into the ground. The water goes down these pipes. The earth naturally heats the water and comes back up.
Okay.
And then that heat. And the geothermal...
So to what temperature? Like boiling water, not boiling water, but you know what I mean.
It just heats it up so to a nice temperature that it can be used to heat your house. The air to water is a really energy efficient heating system. Geothermal is a little bit more efficient because if you imagine like air to water, it's focused on the surrounding air. So we could have three or four different seasons per day. You know, it could be warm, wet, humid. So the air to water system's trying to, you know, regulate all of that, whereas the geothermal's a little bit more stable.
And generally speaking, would you use that system with underfloor heating, or do people still opt for radiators, or are you precluded from one or other?
Underfloor heating would be the preferred option. But if you were retrofitting your house with one of those heat pumps, underfloor heating may not be very easy to do because you're going to dig up your floors. So you can, they work very efficiently with radiators also. But if it was a new build, I would be saying to homeowners, put the underfloor heating in the ground floor. If you can put underfloor heating in the first floor, brilliant. If you can't, radiators is
I can see
too.
The logic of that if you had a slab floor or for whatever reason. Can you insulate an old house with a floating floor?
With a floating floor?
Or is that a floating foundation?
No, so if it's probably a suspended floor, yes.
Okay,
so
you can
remove, that's actually a cheaper way to insulate an older house. So you can lift the suspended timber floor, insulate beneath, and put new floor coverings over the top.
Does Claire know if I can still use my stove and back boiler if I get a heat pump? I have an oil burner, but I don't use it, thank you. So I think they want to retain that sort of...
It's kind of like having two heating systems. Mm. So your back boiler heats your water, your air-to-water heat pump heats your water. You could still have a stove with the air-to-water heating system, but you should not require the stove because the house will be just a nice, comfortable temperature. If you're lighting a stove on top of your heating system, the house is going to be too warm. You're going to have to end up opening windows and that. So,
I know there is this feeling that people still want to burn solid fuel. Do you know what I mean? And it's almost become political in a way.
Yeah.
In other words, you're not going to tell me.
It's very Irish.
You're not going to tell me not to, do you know?
Yeah.
I do like an open fire, don't get me wrong. This is a bit random. They've discovered ants like the new type of insulation. They eat it and live in it. Is this true?
Never heard. Say that again, sorry?
Ants like insulation and eat and live in it.
Oh my God, no, I haven't come across that, thankfully.
Right, okay. So in terms of air to water, is it sore on the electricity or is it offset or what?
No, it's extremely efficient on the electricity, provided that you have the fabric right.
So understood.
Walls, floor, attic, insulation.
But if a lot of heat's escaping from your house, the pump's going to be working harder, thus using more electricity.
Totally. So an air-to-water heat pump is not suitable for a house that's not well insulated. So get the fabric done first before you would even consider the air-to-water heat pump.
But that person, if they currently have oil heating, they're already burning more oil than they need for the same reasons.
Completely. Yeah, okay. And a heat pump's three times more efficient than oil.
What's the lifespan like? Because I was chatting to a guy recently, and after about 5 or 6 years, I don't really like to use it. This is kind of we're getting into the conversation about electric cars, that people don't like electric cars. So the negative stories get amplified, right?
Yeah.
But I actually did speak to this fella whose electric pump went, and I think it was 5 or 10,000 euros something to replace. He says, I'm not replacing it. Is there an issue with the longevity or expense of the pumps that people should be cautious of?
So if I was putting a job out to tender, that would be the first thing I'd be asking. What's the warranty on the heat pump? The pump that I have installed in my house has a 15-year warranty.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's difficult to get that. That's installed about 5 years now. It's difficult to get that length of a warranty nowadays. But a pump can go. You have to, like, the it's you have to look out for things. So if I was my house is quite close to the water in Bunk. I live down near the pier. It's in Bunkranna, so I'm close to the salt air and the water. So I have geothermal, and the reason I went for that is I didn't want my outdoor fan unit on an air to water pump to get corroded. So. You need to speak to your building professional. Speak to your architect, your quantity surveyor, your BER assessor. Get the right information before you just jump into it. Don't just phone somebody up an order.
So the environment is also something you have to consider, not just not just That's another factor. We're talking heating systems, retrofitting, and new builds, and also Claire is involved with a company called Retrofit Grants. So we're going to talk, we'll get through all of that. We have a couple of questions in as it relates to Claire, as it relates to defective concrete homes, the SEA grant, and also, you know, maybe through the rebuilding process and how that can be drawn down, or can it be drawn down in parallel, or what's the story?
So the SEA are actually running an information evening in the National Gateway on Tuesday the 23rd of September next week. It's basically an information evening for defective concrete block homeowners, but also for their building professionals, their architects, their contractor, their engineers, just to get a bit more information on that. So back in 2018, I started getting pilot projects from the SEAI to get grant funding for homeowners that I was their quantity surveyor. And nearly by accident, then the whole thing kind of moved. So we ended up setting up another company called Retrofit Grants that offers the grant funding to homeowners. Primarily, it was only people that I was their quantity surveyor, but it just snowballed then.
Because they would say, well, listen, you're not my quantity surveyor, but can I?
Yeah, exactly. And especially on a local front. So I was providing the grant funding for people in the Leinster region and anyone I was working for locally. But local people started to get in touch with me and say, look, we need grant funding too. Can we avail of it? We're upgrading our home. You're not my quantity surveyor. So kind of just organically grown. So we can provide grant funding, yes, to defective concrete block homeowners. All of those homeowners are entitled to it. We have had three homeowners who received grant funding before Christmas there.
From SEIA?
From the SEIA through our company, Retrofit Grants. They were, all three of them received in the region of about €30,000. There on the 13th of June, the government and the SEIA got together and they kind of smoothed things over and got their systems in place for dealing. It was tricky for them to deal with the payment process for the defective concrete block homes because the rules for SEEI grant funding, you have to have your house built before 2011. You can't have had a grant drawn down before. So it was absolutely brilliant.
And also, too, of course, the defective concrete block scheme was set out where you had to actually finish your house to an old standard.
Which was ludicrous. Yes, absolutely ludicrous. So. Like, I can't go for planning permission to build a house to 2008 building standards. So why should I rebuild a house? It's absolutely ludicrous.
So you believe that's been ironed out to some extent now?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I actually had a meeting with the SEAI today, this morning, in Bunkranna. So yeah, that's very well ironed out. There is a few teething problems happening, but it has been ironed out. So what they have done is they've made so many exceptions to the rule for defective concrete block homeowners. There isn't that year of 2011 criteria anymore. Your house could be built in any year and you will get it. A lot of people got grants for attic insulation, for heat pumps in the past. It doesn't matter if you've got it for your defective concrete block,
because
you can get
this
it again.
This is a reset, effectively.
It's totally reset. You can get it again.
You talked about a 30K figure.
Yeah.
How close will that go to doing the work, I wonder?
So it won't pay for the work. Every house is different. Every house is a different size. For example, for floor insulation, you get a €3,500 grant. That, and the most houses that should buy the insulation, but it won't pay for the concrete subfloor, but the redress scheme is paying for that. Then your cavity wall insulation, the grant is €1,700. If it's a smaller house, that could cover the cost. But the redress scheme is contributing for about 50 mil insulation also. So then for your windows and your doors, you get 4,000 euro for windows. For doors, you get 1,600. That will never cover the cost. But the redress is contributing. Mm. For the heating system, if you go on the SEI's website, you can get a 6,500 euro grant for a heat pump. If you come to retrofit grants like myself, or a one-stop shop, you can get 10,500 euro for a heat pump. So the average house, that would be, you know, a big contributor to paying for your.
I want to get to more listeners' questions, but just as you're talking about it here, this came up in a question before. For people who are drawing down the vacant home money, know what I mean? They can also draw down the SEI grant, can they?
Yes, they can.
At the same time, so that can contribute to providing the doors, the windows and the heat system.
Yes.
That's pretty tasty on top of that, isn't
that's
it?
That's great. So we do quite a lot of vacant and derelict property grant applications. Mm. You can get 50,000 euro for a vacant property, or if you require structural works, you'll get a 20 top up, so that's 70. And then with the SEI of approximately 30, you're getting almost 100 grand to renovate a house, which can go a long way.
I just need a house now.
I know.
Okay, by the way, just before we ask Claire a couple of more questions, because I'm going to ask Claire questions up until we go, you can still book your tickets for tomorrow's special 9 till noon show live from On Green on Theatre. We've got four amazing acts performing live for you. It's going to be presented by me, Paul and Jimmy. Tickets are selling actually really well, but they're not selling. All you have to do is go onto the website and book your ticket. They are free, or call the box office. And as I say, quite a nice little crowd already. So if you want to come along tomorrow morning at 9, pass a Friday morning for you, get on to ongreenon.com. I've been granted the new SEIA grant. I have all the necessary work and paperwork done, but it takes ages for a contractor to begin. Does Claire know why there's such a delay? I was hoping the work would be complete before the winter began.
I suppose it's just down to the availability of your contractor, really. It's really important for a homeowner to have all their ducks in a row, perhaps forward plan, book your contractor, agree the prices. Everyone's busy at the minute.
I like to keep, this is an interesting one, I like to keep my windows open all day long. So how does that work with air to water? Does it cost a fortune on electricity? Now, I mean, this person, regardless of how they're heating their home, if they do this in the winter, they're going to be starting from a very low heating base.
The heat's going to be escaping from the house, but any new build should also be installing a ventilation system, which would be bringing fresh air into the house. It's better for your health, because if you imagine, all of the new houses are very airtight, they're very well insulated, so the air would become very stale very quickly. So all of the new homes should be installing a heat recovery ventilation system, or a demand control ventilation system as a minimum. And I would really urge people to do that. I would compensate and leave off renovating a bathroom, a bedroom, whatever, put in your ventilation system.
Is there any retrospective element to the grant system? This caller pumped their attic, didn't know the grant was available. It was at the time. They wonder, can they claim the money back now?
No, unfortunately not. You have to apply prior to doing the work.
A caller wants to know if there's an advantage to getting your attic pumped with insulation if it's already insulated to current regulation standards. So they're saying, right, we've met regulations. Is it worth putting another layer on top?
If you're at the current regulation standard, no, you should be okay. I wouldn't be overdoing it.
Yeah, there's another issue here with water ingress on defective concrete block homes. I talked about this years ago and no one took me up on it, but it seems to be happening more now, that the water can cross from the outer block to the inner block via insulation, certain types of insulation.
Yeah.
And it can actually start, people with that type of insulation can start seeing internal deterioration.
I've seen that
homes,
yeah.
Thing. Yeah. Okay. So if you get a grant for windows, how much do you have to pay on top of that? Now, so there's a maximum of the grant then, and it's the differences between the price you get for your windows and the grant then?
Yeah, so for windows, you get a 4,000 euro grant under the one-stop shop or the energy coordinator scheme. So you can't go on the SEI's website and just get a grant for windows. You have to be doing a bigger job. Uh-huh. So enough works to bring you up to a B2 energy rating or higher, or rebuilding your home. So you get 4,000 euro for windows and you get 1,600 for doors.
And what would the average... It's average, right? Bungalow, three windows at the front, three at the back.
At least 10 grand. Least 10 grand, maybe more.
Right. Please ask Claire about the window replacement grant. House has wooden windows. How much of a grant allowance, please? You've just answered that. I heard a man on your show last New Year saying the cost of electricity to run this type of heating, water heating, was shocking. If I remember right, it was well over 1,000 he had to turn off the heating in order to get the cost down.
Well, that goes back to the fabric first approach. Your house has to be well insulated. The average A rated home should cost about 800 or 900 euro per year to heat, whereas a G rated home should cost about 11. But nobody pays 11 because you don't turn on the heat. Nobody spends 11,000 euro.
My home's a very old townhouse, partly stone built with a more modern extension. Since I got roof wall insulation, I'm constantly fighting off mildew on walls, furniture, etc. It's a ventilation issue.
Ventilation issue there.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think what you've done is you've done a fantastic job of keeping out air, but you have to allow air to circulate.
And that's very easy to combat. Get a proper building professional and install your extract fence and the problem should be alleviated.
Claire, it's been fascinating and far more interest than I was anticipating, and not because of you, just because, you know, people had lots of questions. So if people want to get more information about your the retrofit grants, the services you provide, how do you go about doing so?
So our company's called Erwin Consulting. We're based in Buncrana, just opposite Supervalue, and our website it's erwinconsultant.ie.
Thank you very much indeed, Claire Erwin. We have to leave it there. We'll be live from On Green On Theatre tomorrow morning from 9. Please tune in, and don't forget, not too late to get your tickets on greenon.com.